Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. We love doing the conversation for you. We always talk to fascinating people, and today is one of those. We are going to be talking to a renowned expert in the field of psychology, who is an extraordinary expert in this field. And for years now, she has been helping business executives and individuals with personal therapy services. She helps them in many regards. Who knows what might be going wrong with some people, why they feel they need therapy, but she is one who really can help you. You have read columns about her and by her in Oprah magazine. You may have seen her on NBC. She has her own television show in the Detroit area, which is where she lives and where her offices are, and her shows on Saturday mornings. You may have seen those shows. She does a lot, and she is so highly regarded. It's just such a delight to have her with us today. Again, her name is Dr. Michelle Leno, and we're going to talk to her about her career, what got her involved in this field of psychology, and how she helps people. And she does it in a variety of ways. I think you're going to find it really interesting. She's a delightful lady. Let's bring her on now, Dr. Michelle Leno. Talk to us now from Detroit. Dr. Michelle, how are you? Nice to have you here today. Welcome aboard. Okay.
Hey, Doug. I'm great, and I'm glad to be here. Hey, I need to let you introduce me for my show. I love that intro.
You do? Okay. Listen, I have to ask you, are you using a speakerphone? Sounds like you might be. And if you are, turn it off. Okay. Yeah, well, we can't do that. This is, you can do it on TV, but not on radio, all righty? So anyway, welcome
better?
Back. Yes, ma'am, that's much better. Do me a favor. Let's begin a little bit. I told you before we started that I want to get a little bit of what got you interested in this field, because you had an early interest in this. When you were an undergraduate in college, you were attracted to this field. How did that begin for you? What made you want to follow this course in your life? Tell me.
You know, Doug, it sounds, and you know, it may sound a little cliche-ish, because a lot of people get into psychology, they talk about like wanting to help people. During undergrad, you know, I knew that I've always been interested in helping people, but also understanding people, and including myself too, and you know, how we operate, why we do the things we do. And in undergrad, I mean, I had some amazing instructors who were like so great at teaching, and they were also psychologists. And in class I would be so fascinated, especially it was like this one abnormal psychology class, and everybody kind of loves that abnormal psychology class, because that's when you learn about all the fascinating things that you're
folks, she just disappeared. That must be a cell phone. Oh, there, you're back. Are you there, Dr. Michelle?
I am.
Yeah, we lost you for a moment there. Go back about 20 seconds and pick. Yeah, all of the line went dead for a moment. Sorry about that. But pick up a little bit where you were, okay? If you can remember.
And well, some of it. I had an abnormal psychology class, and it was absolutely amazing. It was like the things I learned in there. And a lot of people love this class because you learn a lot about, you know, the things like, you know, disorders like schizophrenia. You learn about psychosis. You learn about things like that. And I was like, yeah, you know, I want to know more about this. And I was just like fascinated. And then I started thinking about how psychology applies to everyday life. I know most people see psychologists as people, you know, with the black couch in their office and somebody lying on the couch and they're helping them work through their problems. But there's so much more to the field. And I started to learn about all of that during undergrad and in my master's program. And I thought, you know, this, I can do a lot with this. You know, this is for me. This speaks to me. And this is something I can, you know, go the course with. I can go to school because, you know, nobody wants to be in school forever. And I thought, hey, I can do this. I enjoy this already enough to make a career of it.
You know, that's really interesting. When you originally went to school, I know psychology was a course you took, but what did you think you were going to do? Did you have any idea what you wanted to do for a career in the very beginning before you took that course?
I thought law. Yeah, I thought law. Yeah,
right.
I did. I thought that I even thought about mortuary science. I haven't talked about that too much, but some of like my older aunts like reminded me of that. And I don't know why I thought of mortuary science. Like, don't ask me that, because that is not something I could see myself doing at this point in my life. But I seriously considered going to law school. I was really interested. And I more of the defense end of it, defense attorney. You know, I saw myself there. Then I like to say I got the best of both worlds, because I ended up while I was after I was done with like school, my psychology program, and became licensed, I got referrals, a lot of referrals for FOIA evaluations for people who had been involved in the court. So that involves the legal end of it. So I was still sort of where I was supposed to be, because I still got that legal end of it. And then I even worked with attorneys who are so named like ambulance chasers for people who were injured and they were defending them. I would do the psychological evaluations on them. And so then I do competency evaluations, criminal responsibility. And so all of that, for anybody listening, if you're interested in psychology, it's not just about doing therapy. There's so much more you can do with it. So I did those things, and I still do some of those things, and I blend, you know, it's that law and psychology together. And believe it or not, there are a lot of psychologists, especially in certain areas, I think like California, I came across a lot especially, that have dual degrees. They have law and psychology degrees. They practice, and so they have those two blended.
Well, that's really interesting what you just pointed out. You make it sound like it's a much more interesting field than just sitting as a psychologist in an office with somebody on a couch and chatting with them. By the way, do you do that? Do you have a couch in your office?
I do, yes.
Okay, you do. All right. So it does happen.
Huh? I mean, you have to have a couch in your office. I mean.
Okay. Well, look, I understand you treat all kinds of patients of all ages, from adolescents on up, who have a variety of needs that include things like anxiety, depression, chronic stress, and various life transitions. It covers the gamut of what you do. Let's talk a little bit about the kind of, you know, patients that you treat and some of the situations that you're confronted with. And I know it's fascinating, to say the least. Everyone's different, right?
It is. It is. And I want to say, too, I don't do as much therapy as I used to. My career started out with me doing therapy day and night. I don't even know if I got sleep. But I don't do as much of that anymore. However, I still do maintain a therapy practice where I see maybe a handful of people, a little bit more than that. And a lot of the people I'm seeing now, I'm seeing what I like to call that overlooked population. So early on in the conversation, I talked about like more severe diagnoses like schizophrenia and bipolar disorders and things like that. But what's happening now, and I'm referring to kids and adults, what's happening now, there's this overlooked population of people. They're able to they're functioning in life. They seem to be doing well, and things may even seem to be going well for them. However, they're dealing with a lot of anxiety. They're dealing with a lot of depression. But because, you know, they're, you know, this business owner, nobody's looking at saying, hey, this person may be dealing with some of the same issues that I'm dealing with, and that I'm seeing a lot of that now, because even like mild anxiety, mild depression can impact your functioning, your motivation, your sleep, your overall health. And I'm seeing a lot of people like that. And I think a lot of people like that have been drawn to me because I talk about that a lot. I talk about those situational stressors that can become bigger if we don't deal with them. And it's so important to deal with them. But in order to deal with them, we got to be able to acknowledge them and accept that, you know, okay, my mental health may not be the best right now, so let me do something about it. And I'm seeing that in kids. People are, you know, bringing teenagers to me saying, I don't know what's wrong with him or her. You know, he's acting out and he's doing this or that. But, you know, he's saying he's not depressed or anxious. Well, kids are not just going to come up to you and say they are. I mean, unless, yeah, they're seeing it on TikTok and things like that and everybody's, you know, self-diagnosing. But, again, they seem to be doing well, but there's just something that they need to talk through. And I'm seeing a lot of that, those situational circumstances that have grown a little bit out of control because they were ignored and just not addressed.
I know you see a lot of adolescents. Are they harder to deal with than, you know, older, more mature adults? I would assume they probably are, but tell me, how about that?
Yeah, they are. A little bit. Let me say this. An adolescent who's okay with being in therapy can be a lot of fun, and they have a lot more insight than we give them credit for having. They, you know, it's like once they decide they want to be there, they come in. They don't want to just, like, come right out with the issues. They don't want to necessarily be told all the time, oh, yeah, you're doing this because you're depressed. Oh, yeah, you're doing this because you have ADHD. But sometimes they just want to talk. And if you it takes the clinician to have the patience to just kind of talk about everyday life with an adolescent. Like, you know, you have to ask questions like, you know, what, you know, who are your friends? You know, why do you like hanging out with this group of people? What is it that you enjoy doing? If they start like singing or rapping during a session, you can't disrupt that. You have to just let them do it because that's how you learn about them. That's how you learn about what their interests are. That's how you learn about, like, what it is that's bothering them. And as they see you're allowing that space for them to just be who they are, they then start to open up to you and they'll come in and say, yeah, I'm having a bad day. They have to get to that to be able to say that to you or that they are even willing to say it to themselves. And so when you say, is it harder? It can be because they can be very, very stubborn and resistant to treatment. And a lot of times it's because it's the parent's idea. It's the teacher's idea. And so they're like, you're just an extension of all of these other authority figures that are just driving me crazy and I don't want to be bothered with you or any of them. And so it's the attitude. But once you get past that, adolescents make great clients.
You know, you sound great. I would think it would be tough to crack that door with adolescents who have been assigned to come to you by teachers, yeah, or maybe their parents want their kids to go see someone like you, and they're not excited about doing it. But you've got to crack them. How do you do it? How do you open the door to get inside with them?
You know, I worked somewhere one time, and I used to wonder why. It was the place I worked in where I did psychological evaluations, and the person responsible for scheduling would, like, assign these people to me that were really, like, difficult. You know, I'm just going to say difficult. They were adolescents. And I would say, what's going on? Why are you assigning this person to me? And she's like, well, you're my secret weapon. You tend to get it done when nobody else was able to get it done. And I mean, and I take that. I mean, that's flattering, although it was difficult at the time, but it's a compliment. And I had to figure out what is it that I'm doing.
Well, there we go again. Her line just cut out for a moment. Maybe it'll come right back.
Did my line cut out?
Yeah, just blinked off for a moment. Uh-huh. Anyway,
okay.
What you're saying is really good.
Okay.
Keep going.
So, you know, and I don't know if you heard the part about, like, she referred to me as her secret weapon. And I would think, well, what's going on? And so I had to figure out what it is that I was doing that was different from what, you know, maybe somebody else, you know, was doing. And one of the things that I came up with is that I tended to just, it's a matter of accepting people where they are and not trying to instantly go in and redirect people, not trying to redirect their posture, not trying to redirect the way they're speaking to you, because you have to get to know people before you can even establish rapport. And so sometimes what people do is they try to establish rapport and they try to start, you know, being this authority figure without still even getting to know who they're sitting in that room with, and that is not a very effective way to connect with people. And so that's what I do. I use that approach. It doesn't matter who I'm interviewing. I use that approach that I'm trying to find some connection, some common bond. And you can always find that no matter the age, whether you're much older or younger than a person. You have to find something if you want to make a real connection. And that's so important for any clinician to do. You can't just see yourself as this person who has the answers for a person's life and you're going to tell them what to do. No, you have to connect first, and then you can do that. And that's my approach with everybody.
Well, you know, you do so much. I know you do life coaching, which a whole different ball game than some therapy can be. Obviously, you do therapy and you do consulting. I'm prompted to ask you, do you think everybody can benefit from visiting someone like you and having conversations, and whether it turns out to be therapy or just some consulting? Have I missed something? I've never gone to therapy. I've never talked to a psychologist like you. So you think, have I missed something? What do you think?
No, you know, and it's not that. So one of the things that I always say is that therapy, you know, I see therapy as, you know, not a one-size-fits-all, or, you know, you may need therapy for a day or, you know, 365 days, or you may not go to any formal therapy, but no matter what in your life. So, Doug, when you say, did I miss something? No, but you probably do. You probably have something in your life that is therapeutic for you, right? So whether that's exercise. I always tell people exercise is a form of therapy. If you like to read and you find that soothing, that's a form of therapy. So even if you're not sitting down talking to a licensed professional, you still need to have something in your life that's therapeutic. Now, if you told me you don't have anything in your life that's therapeutic, I would say, yeah, you're missing something. But no, not everybody. I do hot yoga. I love hot yoga, and that is a form of therapy for me. Now, it's intense, but it's still a form of therapy for me. It keeps me sane, and it puts me in a position to be able to help other people. So, you know, that's the way it goes. So I don't want anybody to think of therapy as an all or nothing deal, because then they avoid it. But just because if you go to therapy, you may not even go once a week. You may go once a month, or you may go for a brief period of time, and then you don't go back until you're having a life change, and then you need somebody to bounce some ideas off of, and you go from there.
Is that where your life coaching comes into play when people are going through, you know, major transitions in their life? Maybe somebody's lost a job, or maybe they've lost a relationship, things of that nature. They come to you for help, obviously, right?
Yes. Yes, that's a big part of it. And I love working with people like that. I have people that actually I don't see on a regular basis. They may call me, you know, a year or two later after the last time I saw them, and they say, hey, I'm starting this new business and I just need to talk it through, or I'm getting out of this relationship and I need to just talk through some things. And those people have gotten to the point in life where they do have that insight to know, and they're not ashamed of therapy or coaching or any of those things at all. They really do understand the point of using it to their benefit and making it a tool. They get it. They get that they may not need it all the time, but they want somebody who's not a friend or a relative, a family member, to just kind of process. And that's what therapy is a process. And so, yes, I love working with people like that, people who have decided that it's time to make some changes and, you know, let me talk to somebody about this, because they're usually and scared at the same time. And I help them just work through all of it to weigh the pros and cons. We just go through that. And those, I absolutely love working with people like that.
Who do you find are the most challenging types of clients that you work with?
People who are forced into therapy are always most challenging initially, because, you know, it's really, therapy really has to be about working. If you're talking about, a lot of what I do is like insight oriented and talk therapy, and it really does rely on us working in collaboration. And if you're forced, then you don't really want to partner with me or anybody else to work on your life. because you feel forced into it. However, once a person who's forced into it, so in like forced may mean court ordered, or you are, which I used to do a lot of that. I don't do as much of that anymore. Or again, a parent's telling you need to go, or a spouse is saying you need to go, or you're going to kind of, you know, appear to be making a change, but you're just kind of going through the motions. And so those people can be kind of resistant because, you know, they're like, oh, no, that's not me, or no, I'm not, you know, I don't really have any problems. It's just the people around me that have all the problems. And so it can take a lot to get them to the point where they're able to admit that, okay, I do have some things that I need to work on, and it's not just all the other person's fault. But nonetheless, that can be, that person can be very difficult in therapy early on because you're spending a lot of time working through resistance, and that's not what, you know, that's not the part that most of us like, but we deal with it when necessary.
Yeah, I can understand that. You know, you do this on television, by the way. What do you do on television? You have a show that runs on TV20 in Detroit on Saturday mornings at 11:30 for anybody in the Detroit area who hasn't seen you. That's where you can see it. What do you do on your TV show?
And so now let me say the TV show was on TV20. It is now on, so it moved to CW50. CW50 is now Detroit 50. They've rebranded, and so it's now Detroit 50. And so you can see it there every Saturday at 11:30 a.m., Mind Matters with Dr. Michelle. And for the show, so I am a host and also one of the executive producers of the show. And I talk to people either that they come on there to talk about their personal experience, mental health experiences and challenges, or I'm talking to people. You know, it may be somebody in business. I cover all things health on the show. So it may be related to medication. It may be related to life transitions. I mean, you can hear about so many different things on the show. I mean, we're always talking to people that have faced some obstacles. And now, you know, the positive part is now they're on the other side of that. And I love to encourage people because they can see sometimes you're looking at people. I talk to people who may be doctors and they're talking about some challenges that they've had. And now they're sitting here, or business owners, and they are talking about, you know, things that they've gone through that had them really down and out. And now they're, you know, doing such great things for themselves and other people. So we discuss all things health, and we're always looking for guests, but I absolutely love interviewing and just getting to know people.
You know, I would think it would be hard to do that on television where people have to open up to you, and yet the television audience is seeing them. Do you find that they can be really honest when they know they're on television? Radio's a little bit different. They can do it, you know, everybody
right.
knows who they are. TV's different from there. They're exposing themselves, right, to a point of degree.
Yeah. Well, one of my producers and also floor director, Robert, he's really good at, you know, he's good at, like, telling people, like, early on once they sit down and they're getting mic'd and, you know, doing some last-minute appearance checks and everything, mic checks. You know, he's good at telling people, hey, you may be nervous starting out, but once you start and you're talking to Dr. Michelle, you're going to forget that these cameras are rolling. And a lot of times people do. And I'm really bad at, like, I have to, the way we record is I have to, like, stop for breaks. And, you know, my team, they're like, okay, it's time to stop, you know. But sometimes we get so into the conversation and they really do forget that the cameras are rolling. And that, you know, a lot of times guests will say to me, wow, time went by so fast. And I love that because I can tell by that point they've let their guard down and they were able to open up and just talk to me. And I love that. So, yeah, you're right. I think a lot of times people are worried about appearance. They're worried about, you know, was I shiny on TV? Did I get this right or did I get that wrong? But once they get into that conversation, they're fine.
Well, that's a tribute to you. That really is. If you can get them so engrossed and they forget they're on television, and that's great. That's the best. You know, I know you work with a lot of different kinds of clients, and you must have a lot of success stories. And I know also you work with clients briefly, but then it takes some clients take a lot of, you know, a lot of sessions to get success. I was going to ask you, give me one of your success stories, one of your favorite ones of somebody that you worked with who you really helped turn them around. How would you answer that?
So one of my, I have a few, but one of my success stories is I started, as I mentioned, I do some life coaching and working with someone. I mean, when they came to me, they were really, they really just didn't see themselves getting through. And it took some time. I want to point this out. This wasn't an overnight situation where they saw me and they were fine. But it really took some time for them to, and they, although they thought they would never get through the situation, they were going through divorce, they were planning to leave their job that they absolutely, you know, just did not like at the time. And we worked together. I mean, it took several months, and we were working together, and gradually I was able to see their progress before they were able to see their progress. But they had gone through the divorce first, and they got through that. And I mean, there was a lot of sadness, a lot of anxiety in between all of that. But we did some pretty intense therapy. I mean, I worked with them ongoing, and this is somebody I still work with sort of like intermittently. And they got through this process. They, not only did they leave their job, but they started the business that they wanted to start. They had been planning to start. These were things that they just couldn't think, they couldn't see themselves doing. And they were actually frustrated with me because being unrealistic about things they needed to do in order to feel better. Because I would say, yeah, you can see me forever in therapy, and I can help you maybe remain comfortable while you're dealing with all these stressors. But at the end of the day, all of these things are going to still be there if you're not willing to make any changes. And this is what I'm telling, you know, and I don't mind telling people that they need to leave their jobs. And some people are like, what do you mean? I have a pension and I have these things. But sometimes you need to understand that this is no longer serving you. This is not going to keep working for you. And this person, I mean, they were able to do these things. I mean, they leaned on me a lot, and, you know, and I absolutely loved working with them. And it was challenging because I knew that they were ready, but they were just really afraid and anxious about it, but they got through it. And I mean, they, to my knowledge, this person is still doing well. And wow. I'm really, really, really grateful to have been involved in that situation. And the last time they reached out to me, they were still doing well. So no regrets.
Yeah, that's so great to be able to help somebody like that. You know, looking back on it, I think you probably picked the proper profession, don't you think? I gather you love what you're doing. Am I right?
I absolutely love what I do, and I love that there is such a diverse field. You know, I can do consulting. I do work on a daily basis where I consult and give my expertise, and I don't. And it's not. It doesn't involve therapy at all. And so I love, love, love what I do. I love problem solving. You know, I guess that's part of it. I love helping people problem solve, and just, you know, get to the point where they're saying, "I got this. We got this."
Good for you. That's great. You know, we've gone through the half hour just like that, Dr. Michelle. I want to point out you have a great website. There are two websites for you, either drmichelleshow.com. You can remember that, folks, drmichelleshow.com, or dmlpsych.com. That's your office. DMLPsych.com. All right. Anyway, Dr. Michelle, thanks for taking the time to be with us. It's been great having you as a guest. You're a lovely lady. Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate it.
Thank
okay?
you, Doug. Have a great one. Okay.
Thank you. Same to you, my dear.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for today, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this. Fascinating lady to talk to. Obviously, therapy can always be of help to you. And if you need to refer to somebody, give her a call. Look her up. All right. Thank you. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.